KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, President Trump announced the framework for a new GOP tax cut plan.
This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and I guess it's probably something I could say that I'm very good at. I've been waiting for this for a long time. We're going to cut taxes for the middle class, make the tax code simpler and more fair for everyday Americans.
And the plan would lower the highest individual tax rate, increase the standard deduction, and drop the corporate tax rate from 35 to 20%. Supporters say the sweeping changes will make American businesses more competitive, but critics argue they would hurt middle class and poor Americans while giving a break to corporations and the wealthy. We'll discuss it and debate it next. Welcome to this morning's Forum program. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, President Donald Trump and Republican leaders announced their new tax plan. It would lower the highest individual tax rate, increase the standard deduction, and drop the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. Supporters say the sweeping changes will make American businesses more competitive, but critics say the plan hurts middle class and poor Americans while letting corporations and wealthy individuals off the hook. A preliminary analysis by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget said the tax plan would worsen the federal deficit by $2.2 trillion over the next 10 years. Joining us first to discuss the plan before we get into a debate about it is LA Times reporter Jim Puzangera, and he is also, I should mention, someone who covers business and economic issues. And Jim, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. We should mention initially this is a 9-page framework. It is really just a framework. The devil is definitely in the details for Congress to work out. It's a revamping of the U.S. tax code, but it's being called an overhaul. And Jim Puzangera, I think one would be more correct by saying it's a lot of tax cuts like we saw back in 1981 under Ronald Reagan rather than an overhaul of George Bush Sr. in 86.
Yeah, as you said, the devil's in the details, and there aren't a lot of details in this 9-page document. There's a lot of promises about deductions and exemptions being eliminated, particularly for business, but most of them are not listed. What we do know are cuts in rates and a few other things that would seem to indicate that businesses definitely are going to make out much better and the wealthy are going to benefit. As far as the middle class, it's a little uncertain, and some of that's going to depend on how they flesh out some of the things that they put forth. For example, they haven't even put income levels for the new tax brackets that they are proposing.
Well, they are talking, though, about three income tax rates, aren't they, as opposed to the, now we have seven income brackets, right? They're going to collapse them into three?
Yeah, they would collapse seven into three. The highest one, the 39.6 bracket, which applies to income over about $400,000, that would go down to 35%. They would also raise the lowest income tax rate from 10% to 12%. Now, they have said that they are going to consider adding in another bracket, a fourth bracket for higher earners that most likely would be less than 39.6, but would be higher than the 35%. But that's uncertain. And they said that that would be done if they needed to do that in terms of making sure that the wealthy don't benefit more than the middle class in this plan.
And most deductions, apart from charity and home mortgage interest, would be eliminated? At least that's what it says in the present plan, isn't it?
Yes. One of the goals of the stated goals of the plan is to simplify the tax code. And one of the ways they're simplifying that is eliminating deductions. And on the personal side, they have said that they're going to keep the deductions for mortgage interest and for charitable contributions. Now, that they may change them and limit them, but they are still going to be there. They're going to eliminate all the other ones, the most notable of which, at least for people in California and some of the other large states, is the deduction for state and local income taxes. That would be eliminated, and that would be a big hit in California, where you have high taxes and you have high earners and a lot of people who use that deduction.
We've got Jim Puzangero on the line with us from the nation's capital. He's a reporter for the LA Times. He covers business and economic issues. What about that promise that there wouldn't be any adding to the debt? What happened to that? I mean, we're talking now, at least the Republicans are talking about aiming for changes to bring an added $1.5 trillion to the debt over 10 years, and that's supposed to be an acceptable level.
Yes, and some of this depends on where you come at this from a political and economic standpoint. What the Republicans are arguing is that, yes, this may increase the debt in the short term, but the economic growth that will be produced by the tax cuts will lead to more economic growth, more tax revenue, and make that debt problem go away. That's a supply-side argument that many economists say is not reality.
Excuse me, supply side. It's also the old trickle down notion, isn't it? Pretty much.
Yeah, depending on how you want to view it, the trickle down, the supply siders view trickle down as a pejorative, so they prefer to call it supply side. But the basic premise is that if you cut taxes for the upper level, that they are going to spend more, invest more, and then those benefits are going to work their way down through the economy. But that's a debatable economic theory. It hasn't been the case in previous tax cuts, but that's how they're justifying those deficit additions in the short term.
Well, we'll hear some of that debate shortly between Jared Bernstein and Chris Edwards, who we have with us for this hour. But I want to get back to the process here with you, Jim. At this point, we're talking about a starting point for negotiations. I mean, it's an outline that's going to go to Congress, basically, right?
Yes. What they did is that the White House and the majority leader of the Senate and the House Speaker and the chairman of the House and Senate tax writing committees, they all got together and came up with a framework, a set of principles off of. And now it's going to those committees to try to fill in the details. And this is a very complicated subject, and those details are very complicated. One theory as to why they did not delineate the deductions and tax breaks that they want to get rid of is to give lobbyists less time to lobby to keep those in place. But at some point, they're going to have to say what they're going to get rid of, and that's where the battle is going to come in to get this done. And you've also got a number of Republicans from states like New York, New Jersey, and California who may have problems with the state and local tax deduction being eliminated. So that may be a hurdle for them to overcome. A number of New York and New Jersey Republicans have already said they have a problem with that. So this is going to be a process that ideally, according to the Republicans, will take just a few weeks. They'll have a bill, they'll vote on the bill, and this will all be done by the end of the year. Others are more skeptical that you can do something this complicated that quickly.
Well, the next step is actually a budget resolution that would allow a tax bill to pass, and they can use reconciliation with a budget resolution. They can talk about drafting a budget and send it to the Senate as early as next week. But there's a lot of talk in this, and I'd just like to get your thoughts about this before we get into a debate here, about raising revenue to offset the cuts and about eliminating loopholes, but we're not getting any specifics, are we?
No, we're getting a few specifics. As I said, the state and local tax deduction is eliminated. There's a couple of broad business deductions. There's an interest deduction that's being eliminated, but for the most part, the details have yet to be worked out. They've sort of laid out a broad framework with tax rates, and both for businesses and individuals. And now they have to make that work and find a way to make it amenable to a number of Republicans who are concerned about the deficit.
Again, Jim Puzangero joining us from Washington, reporter for the LA Times, who covers business and economic issues. And Jim, thanks for the outline that you've given us. I much appreciate your being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Let me tell you who's going to be with us for the rest of the hour. Jared Bernstein is joining us. He's senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, former chief economist of Vice President Joe Biden, and author of a book called The Reconnection Agenda, Reuniting Growth and Prosperity. Jared Bernstein, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
And glad to have you. Also glad to have Chris Edwards, who joins us from Washington as well. He directs tax policy studies for the Cato Institute. He's editor of www.downsizinggovernment.org. And Chris Edwards, glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Let me begin, Chris, with you, because I think it'd be fair to say you're kind of bullish on this. At least you said the Republicans are on the right track here. And supply-side economics that we talked about briefly with Jim Pusingera, in many people's mind, sounds like something that has failed over and over again. Why should this work now, or why do you feel bullish on it?
You know, the basic idea is there's no doubt that the current tax system causes a lot of damage to the U.S. economy. In recent years, for example, there's been story after story in the newspapers about how big U.S. corporations, for example, are moving some of their operations abroad, or sometimes they're moving their headquarters abroad. And they're doing that because we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. So a basic supply side idea is that you reduce the cost of production here in the United States by reducing taxes and or reducing regulations on businesses. Businesses will build more factories and more facilities here in the United States. They'll invest in more equipment and buildings, and they'll have to hire more workers to run those new factories. And so it'll be a win-win. You reduce the cost of production, there'll be more production here, workers win, businesses win, and actually the government ends up winning because the government would have more revenue coming in. So Republicans, in their plan yesterday, they would cut the corporate tax rate, they would cut the tax rates for some small businesses. That moves in the right direction.
Well, you also got them cutting, also cutting tax rate for high earners. You feel pretty strongly that that's right because they pay more. They pay disproportionately more. But they also, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here, but also when you let taxes drop on the rich, the notion is from supply side, you're creating more for investment and growth. And where's the proof in that?
Well, it's pretty basic. It's a basic tax economics thing that the highest tax rates produce the most damage, and it's also true that the people at the top actually have the most flexibility, and they respond most strongly. So if you raise taxes too high on high earners, they work and invest less, and they also try to avoid and evade taxes more. It's the same with corporations. I mean, there's been a lot of complaints about how rich people in some corporations, they will move their money offshore, and they will do other sorts of tax dodges. That's driven by high tax rates. So if you lower tax rates, it's a win-win. You get the rich people and corporations doing more productive things and cheating less. So that benefits the government and it benefits the economy.
And what's the benefit of this proposal's saying we should eliminate the estate tax and alternative minimum tax?
Well, the estate tax, here's the basic thing with the estate tax is, you know, we want rich people to invest their money because it helps the whole economy grow. It's much better for the rest of us if rich people invest rather than consume. So I would rather Bill Gates go out and use his money to do productive investments than rather buying a bunch of expensive cars and yachts and the like. So the estate tax encourages wealthy people to consume because they know if they pass away, there's a high estate tax, the government's going to take half of their money. So leading up to their death sometime in the future, they're going to consume more. So that's not good. So I think the estate tax is an anti-savings tax, and that hurts all of us, not just the wealthy themselves.
And again, Chris Edwards with us from Washington, directs tax policy studies for the Cato Institute. Jared Bernstein is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And Jared Bernstein, you had a piece in the American Prospect back the end of September that sort of, disputed a lot of what we're hearing from Chris Edwards. But you kind of turned attention or spotlight on Kansas. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of that? Because it really does apply here, doesn't it?
It does, and I'll get to that. But let me start out by saying, with respect to Chris, and I do have a lot of respect for him, there's just no empirical evidence for everything he just said. And while I definitely share some of those, I was taught some of the same theories he was, what really matters is how this stuff works in real life. I'll get to the Kansas story in a second. But first, you have to understand some of the basic facts of the case. So Chris said we have
When you say there's no empirical evidence, you're talking about supply side, essentially, again? Yeah.
Correct. There's no empirical evidence connecting tax cut reductions to faster growth, faster jobs, faster investments. Now, I can show you periods where we increased taxes and growth and investment went up. So that's the opposite. I can also show you periods where we cut taxes and they went up. What I can't show you is any consistent linkage, correlation, causal linkages between changes in the tax code and the kind of outcomes that Chris is touting. And I'll tell you this, this is in some ways most important. Here's what happens when you cut taxes by this much. The Treasury ends up collecting less revenue and your deficit goes up. Even if you want to apply some of the, quote, dynamic scoring, the kind of the fairy dust that Chris was talking about, you never make back anything like the cost of your tax cut. Even in the most, I would argue, unrealistic assumptions, you might get back, you know, 10, 15%. But to say the tax cut will pay for itself, never, ever in history. Okay, Kansas. Oh, first I wanted the corporate rate. Chris said we have the highest corporate statutory rate in the world. That is absolutely correct among all the advanced countries. But the thing is our corporations, especially our multinational corporations, do not pay that top rate. There are so many special privilege types of income and loopholes, and credits and deductions, that the average effective rate, actually what they pay, their tax liability as a share of their earnings, turns out to be somewhere between 20 and 25%. Now, that puts us right in the middle of the international pack, so I wanted to get that straight. Here's the thing about Kansas. Here's why Kansas is germane to everything I've been saying. The very same architects, I mean, actually some of the same people who wrote the tax plan that we're talking about today, and the brains behind this plan, went to Governor Sam Brownback a few years ago back in Kansas and convinced him that if he tried to do the same kinds of supply side or trickle down tax cuts by cutting personal income tax rates and also cutting this pass through business income rate, which is part of the Trump plan. So that's one of the linkages I wanted to show you. They tried this a special privileged low rate for pass through business. We can get into that in a minute, but it's the same thing they tried in Kansas. And they were told by these tax writers that, in fact, their revenue would be replaced by the growth effects because they were going to have great job and GDP growth at the state level. None of that materialized, as anyone could have predicted. Not only did Kansas employment and growth do less well than surrounding states and less well than the nation, but their revenues took a very significant hit. Their bond rating was downgraded twice because their lenders didn't have faith in the credit of their public sector anymore, and they started having to cut vital services, most notably education. At that point, the legislature, Republicans, I will tell you, and pretty pragmatic ones.
Excuse me, Jerry, let me back up for a moment. Also, you point out job growth didn't go anywhere. In fact, it went down.
Well, that's my point. It's not that it didn't go anywhere. It's that it wasn't as quick as the neighboring states or the nation. So they didn't get the economic boost that was advertised. They did lose the revenue. As I said, that's what always happens when you cut taxes. It's not rocket science. So the legislature there, Republican legislature, but I think a very pretty clear thinking one, I think, by the evidence, decided that they had to repeal those tax cuts. I mean, 100,000 people in Kansas, business, you know, quote, businesses, decided that because pass-through business income was now zeroed out, well, what do you know? Their income is pass-through income. So all you're doing with that is inviting a loophole. And, you know, thankfully, the Kansas legislature just didn't believe that kind of fairy dust that they continue to try to sell us.
Let me go back to Chris Edwards and get him to comment on what you're calling fairy dust. But in addition to that, if I could, Chris Edwards, I'd like to get your response to the fact that conservative Republicans generally, in fairly significant numbers, oppose these kind of taxes being reduced for higher income people. It's actually 42 to 50, according to the ABC Washington Post poll. That's pretty high numbers. Actually, for Democrats, it's 32-62. And President Trump, in fact, along with saying that hedge funds should get some taxes, which he does not seem to have had fulfilled, at least in this proposal that's being put forward, also didn't seem to agree with the idea that even Warren Buffett has said that this isn't a good idea. So I'm just throwing out a lot of stuff here, I realize, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are saying this doesn't work. That, in other words, if you cut taxes on the rich, you're not going to have more jobs, you're not going to have increased economy, and you're not going to have benefit to the economy.
So the way I would think about tax reform and tax cuts going ahead here is I would target the most damaging parts of our tax code and reduce those taxes. But I am concerned, as you and Jared expressed, I am concerned about the deficit. I don't believe that the Republicans should do a giant tax cut as President Trump often promises, unless they also cut spending. I am concerned about the deficit. It's over $600 billion, and it's rising up to a trillion. Republicans always promise they're going to cut spending, and they don't. So that said, I do think, though, that our high corporate tax rate is sort of a national, creating a national economic emergency here. We have companies and factories leaving the United States, which is it's a real shame. They should be here producing good jobs for American workers and creating exports for our economy, and they're not. They're moving abroad because of our high corporate taxes. So that's a real problem, and I would tackle that first before I did anything on the individual side. So I would cut the corporate taxes, and there's been recent examples. For example, in both Canada and Britain, and I've looked at the data in detail, they slashed their corporate taxes dramatically over the last decade, and the governments have not lost money in terms of corporate tax revenue. It is really dramatic. Why? Because you cut the corporate tax, corporations cheat less, they build more factories at home, they bring profits that are sitting abroad back home, and the government doesn't lose. Everyone wins. So I think so that is the most important thing we need to do. The individual tax cuts, I wouldn't do giant tax cuts unless they're matched by spending cuts, because I am worried about the deficit.
Well, let's go to the corporate tax cuts, Jared Bernstein, with you.
Sure.
I mean, you've said that these cuts generally are going to do nothing for the people who elected Donald Trump, and in fact, there's been a lot of concern about what is the middle class going to benefit, how are families going to benefit, how is the working poor going to benefit. Let's just take families for a moment, because President Donald Trump's top economic advisor, Gary Cohen, was on ABC's Good Morning today. And let's hear what he said about the question that had to do with guaranteeing the taxes won't go up for some middle class families.
If I'm hearing you correctly, you can't guarantee that no middle class family will get a tax increase. There will be middle class families who get a tax increase under your plan, correct?
George, there's an exception to every rule.
So that's a yes.
So look, I can't guarantee anything. You can always find a unique family somewhere. What our job here and what we've been working on in the White House is to create an economic stimulus package by using taxes to drive the economy of the United States.
All right. I do want to get a response from you on that, Jared Bernstein, as well as how the cutting in corporate taxes are going to help the working poor or everyday Americans who may have voted for Trump. But first, I want to give out the phone number, because listeners do and should indeed join us on this. I know many of you would like to weigh in here, and I want to give you the opportunity to do that and let you know how you can. If you give us a call, you can be part of the program. The number to call toll-free is 866-733-6786. Toll-free, join us now at 866-733-6786. Whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite, feel free to become part of the program. You can also write to us, forum@kqed.org, or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But please feel free to participate. Let's hear your questions and your comments. And we'll hear also from Jared Bernstein when we return. Quick break, and then to Jared Bernstein, and then to you, our listeners. Join us. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about President Trump's newly released tax plan with Jared Bernstein, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and Chris Edwards, who is director of tax policy studies at the Cato Institute. And you can give us a call and join this program. The number to call is 866-733-6786, or you can write to us, forum@kqed.org. That's our email address. Or comment on our website or place questions there, kqed.org/forum. And before we went to that break, I was about to have Jared Bernstein wait in here just on how these corporate tax cuts are going to help the ordinary people, particularly maybe families and the working poor.
To answer
more
that
fairy
question,
dust.
I mean, to answer that
Yeah, sorry.
To answer your question, I think you have to step back and look at how the corporate sector is doing. If you listen to Chris, and again, I enjoy debating Chris on this stuff. He's passionate, and we share a lot of the same concerns, especially around the deficit. But if you listen to Chris, you kind of get two impressions. One is that our corporations are really hamstrung and they're suffering. And the second is if we cut their taxes, quote, everybody wins. Now, the minute I hear someone say everybody wins, as Chris did in a tax debate, you know, my hackles go up because that's just not the way real life works in these tax changes over time. Typically, what happens is you have winners and losers, and sometimes that's appropriate. But in this case, the winners, the corporate sector, by taking their tax rate down from 35% to 20%, that's the proposal, not only would win big, but they're already winning big. Okay, so this is my point, that the corporate sector clearly is not hampered, hamstrung, hurt, held back by the current tax system, even though Chris and I would probably agree that our corporate tax system is kind of a mess. But one of the ways it's a mess is that it already gives so many privileges to the corporate sector that nobody pays that 35%, at least I should say. It's not really true. There are lots of less advantaged businesses that pay it, but nobody without a bevy of tax lawyers would pay that. And so if you look at their profitability, the profitability of the U.S. corporate sector is about as high as it's ever been. If you look at the amount of retained earnings or cash that they're sitting on, such that they could invest and grow and create jobs very easily now if they wanted to, it's $2.5 trillion, which is an historical high. If you look at the amount, the cost of borrowing for them in capital markets, it's historically low. So neither on the tax code side, nor on the profitability side, nor on the trillions of retained earnings side, can you make a coherent argument that our corporations are held back by the tax code. So the idea that they would create growth and jobs and investments if you just wrapped it all up in a bow and gave them some more goodies simply flies in the face of the facts as we know them. Furthermore, the play here, if you sort of parse out what Chris is arguing, the idea is that if you give these corporate tax folks, if you give these corporations a tax break, they'll spend more and they'll invest more and they'll be more productive, and the productivity growth will trickle down to the typical worker. Well, first of all, they could invest all they wanted to now if based on cash on hand, but they decided not to. But secondly, we know that a fundamental problem in this economy is precisely this lack of trickle down. Even if this scenario were to unfold and productivity growth were to increase, there's been a large and notable gap for decades on end, we call this inequality, between the growth in GDP or productivity and median incomes or wages of the of working class folks. So no, it's not going to help them.
Getting a lot of responses, by the way, about this whole question of trickle-down economics or supply-side economics. Stephanie tweets, doesn't work. Another listener tweets, bipartisan Reagan tax reform took a year through committees to develop and was revenue neutral. This is wealth preservation. And let me go to your calls, and let's begin with Tom. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm curious. Donald Trump has talked about a lot about let's make America great again from, I presume he's referring to the 50s and 60s when there's a great middle class grew and enlarged. A lot of boats were rising. I'm curious about what was the percentage of the government's revenues through taxes that corporations paid, the wealthy paid, and the middle class paid? Not the rates, but the percentage of income that the government received from these groups.
I don't know, Jared Bernstein or Chris Edwards, you have those figures maybe?
Yeah, I mean, the share of corporate tax revenues as a share of the economy, the share of GDP, has fallen pretty dramatically over the decades. And it goes to some of what Jared was talking about. Jared noted that the effective or average rate that the corporations pay has dropped. So even though the federal legal rate is 35%, many corporations actually pay maybe 20 or 25% of their profits and taxes. But you see, this goes to the central problem. Because the rate is so high, corporations go to extreme lengths to avoid and evade taxes. They move the money abroad. They don't invest. So that has pushed the rate down. So, you know, Jared mentioned that the corporations are, U.S. corporations are sitting on a lot of cash. That goes right to my point. They're sitting on cash because if they invest and build new factories here, they know those profits are going to be hit with this high tax. So the fact that they're sitting on cash proves, you know, just proves my point that the rates are too high. Corporations invest. They build new factories to earn profits, to earn after-tax profits. If you cut their tax rate, they will earn more profits, and so they'll want to hire more workers and build more factories to earn more profits. They don't do it out of the goodness of their heart. So the high tax rate we have on corporations, it really hurts everyone. We have tens of millions of Americans work for big companies like Ford and DuPont and Apple. They're proud to work for those big companies. If you cut the corporate tax rate, it's really a cut for them so they can better compete in the global economy.
Well, Chris, I'm looking at a couple of tweets here that I'd like to get your response to. One listener says,
Jared,
let me just get this on the record here, and then I'll go right to you.
Okay, and then I want to respond to
that. I know you do, but I wanted to get Chris's response to a couple of things that are coming in here right hot off the griddle. One listener tweets, why does Edwards think companies will bring their companies back rather than stay abroad with already lower taxes? It makes no sense. And Ernst says, I'm a relatively wealthy guy. I invest my money. All I'm doing is trading public stocks with other wealthy people. How does that help the economy? These stock holdings do not boost the economy in any way I can see. Chris?
It's obvious that it's funny because most of the left-to-center politicians in Washington have been complaining for years that U.S. corporations are moving their profits abroad, and they are because they're being pushed out by high taxes. So, you know, it's funny, but me as a libertarian and a lot of politicians on the left kind of agree that corporations are they have a very dynamic response to high taxes. If you impose high taxes on them, they do stuff. They move their profits away and they don't build factories here. You cut the corporate tax, the profits will come back. And again, we've seen this around the world. Many countries that are left of center, whether it's France or Canada, they have dramatically cut their corporate tax rates because they know the high rates will shoot themselves in the foot. So you look at the foreign experience, and it's obvious the direction we have to go. It's a global economy. We have to deal with that reality.
I got to go back to you, Jared Bernstein.
So, again, this is all theoretical. If you actually look at the relationship between changes in corporate tax rates and investment, you know, there's really nothing there. And I have a quote that I often put in. I do a lot of statistical analysis of this sort of thing, looking for these correlations under every rock I can find, and you know, they're just not there. And I love to quote Warren Buffett wrote an op-ed in the New York Times a couple of years ago. People should look it up. It's really a smart piece of work. And he called it, "Why Does Our Tax Code Coddle the Rich So Much?" And one of the things he says is that people don't make investments at the margin based on the tax code. They make investments based on whether they're going to have a return. And as long as our corporations are paying on average 20 or 25% as an effective rate, of course they're going to have a return. Now, if you look at the history of our corporate tax rates or our income tax rates and GDP growth and investment, you'll see why the empirical case, the evidence-based case I'm making, has to be true. And it kind of reminds me of what one of the earlier callers, Tom, said. Back in the 50s and 60s, the top marginal rate for income was 90%. GDP grew 4.5%. Investment was extremely strong. Back in the 50s and 60s, the top corporate rate was 50%. And again, investment was very strong. Now, I'm not advocating for going back there. And in fact, I wouldn't have a problem in bringing down the statutory rate, broadening the base in order to be at least revenue neutral. Although I think revenue positive would be what we really need. But if you think that somehow this time history is going to be different and you're going to tweak the corporate tax code and get an investment boom at the same time that the corporations are already sitting on all the investment dollars they need, you know, you're just kidding yourself, and you're playing into the thing that bothers me, especially with someone like Chris, who I know really cares about the budget deficit, is you're playing into the hands of a Republican caucus that is simply going to further screw up our fiscal accounts. And I know that Chris doesn't want that any more than I do.
I think at this point, it's also unpredictable. I just want to say, because I did read your piece, Jared, in the American Prospect about how you thought there goes health care when Trump was elected, and were wrong. It hasn't gone yet, and we haven't necessarily seen
In fact, Bob Corker said this is probably more difficult in many ways in health care to get through. Republicans have been notoriously fractionalized, although at this point the House Freedom Caucus has actually approved the framework, and we'll have to see how it goes down politically. But let me get more callers on here, and I want to get Kevin on next. Kevin, join us.
Good morning. I wanted to comment on the idea of the reduction of corporate taxes bringing jobs back to America. This is quite folly. The reason that jobs are going out of the country are because of the low cost of resources in foreign markets, primarily raw materials and labor. The idea of lowering taxes for corporations in the United States to bring jobs back here, I don't see a connection between the two, because the resources will still be less costly in foreign markets. The United States labor market is much too expensive, and that's a good thing for us and a bad thing for being able to maintain jobs here. But I'd like the explanation on how the gentleman believes jobs will come back to the United States when resources and labor are so cheap in foreign markets. I'll take my answer on the air.
Yeah, Chris. Edwards.
Look, the answer to that is that U.S. companies open subsidiaries abroad for all kinds of different reasons. Some U.S. companies build factories abroad to take advantage of lower cost labor in other countries. So a company like Levi Strauss that makes jeans, they have clothing factories in a lot of lower wage countries. Absolutely true. But there are many, many companies, especially the high tech companies like Apple and Intel and many others, they build factories in companies that have skilled countries that have skilled workforces and low corporate taxes. So, a big reason why a lot of facilities are opening in China in over the last few decades is not so much the low labor costs. It's because they have low taxes, and they often give long tax holidays to corporations. They say, if you build a factory here, we won't tax you for 10 or 20 years. So it's that tax competition that is pulling a lot of investment out of the United States, and that's what we have to respond to.
And let's hear a response from you, Jared Bernstein.
Very quick response that I have to inject a note of reality into this part of the discussion. We're creating a lot of jobs in this country. Our unemployment rate is 4.4%. Okay, we have a Federal Reserve that is talking about and actually has been raising interest rates slowly, but raising interest rates because they're worried that the job market is too hot. Now, I'd like to see more job creation. Don't get me wrong. I'd certainly like to see some job creation in places that haven't benefited from the expansion. But the notion in this part of the conversation that because of the tax system, the U.S. Job creation machine is jammed in neutral is completely belied by the fact that we're in the ninth year of an expansion with strong job growth.
And here's John, our next caller. John, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Krasny. I'd just like to separate the class warfare from some of the experience of lowering corporate tax rates. And you take the historical record of what happened in Ireland when they were exporting people because they didn't have enough work for them. And they lowered their tax rate, I think, to 5%. And Microsoft went in there, and other corporations, Nike and other people, and turned the whole economy around. So the cutting the tax rate for the corporate doesn't help the working poor immediately, but what it does is it creates employment. And in Ireland, actually, we were bringing British people into Dublin to fill the slots because, as the gentleman just said, we already didn't have enough people. Now, then Ireland raised its corporate tax rate, and Microsoft and other people went to Romania. And it takes a couple of years for it to happen.
Yeah, John, let me go to Jared Bernstein on this. Jared, go ahead. Ireland versus Kansas.
So I think in Ireland they cut the corporate tax rate initially to 12.5%. Isn't that right, Chris? I think that's what it was.
It was cut to 12.5 and then stayed at 12.5.
So they cut the They cut the eventually they found that they were having very much the same kinds of revenue problems that I'm worried about, and they've talked about increasing taxes, and including the corporate rate. They've also gotten pressure from the larger European community because of so much of the kind of shifting that the caller was talking about, ways in which firms ship profits to low tax havens. Ireland's one of them, but the Cayman Islands is another. And so I do think that this is a destructive trend that we'd want to do something about. I think the thing for this debate, and I think I'd like to hear Chris deal with this, is that, you know, he may want a corporate tax rate of 12% or 5% or 0%. I'd be interested in what he said. We're not going to go there. We're not going to play that game. We're not going to have that chase. Even Donald Trump has said, I want to get to 15%. And his advisors say, no, you're going to have to get to 20. So we're never going to win that competition. And we shouldn't even try.
So, you know, the Ireland story is Ireland in the 90s, they cut their corporate tax rate to 12.5%, which was much lower than their main trading partners in Britain and Europe. The Irish economy has boomed. Ireland became one of the richest and still is one of the richest nations in Europe now. It's been fantastic for Irish workers and the Irish economy. Ireland got hit with a financial crisis 7 or 8 years ago, just like we did, but they're back up now. The economy's booming. It's been a fantastic thing. Big American corporations, Hewlett Packard, Intel, many others built factories in Ireland. So, you know, Jared, you know, it's not been destructive at all. It's been extremely positive for Irish workers. It's true that other European countries are scared about all this competition from Ireland these days, and they're trying to get them to raise their corporate tax. But to Ireland's advantage, they've kept this low tax. So, you know, this brings up the basic question, you know, about the corporate tax. Who pays the corporate tax anyway? Corporations don't. Corporations are just tax collectors for the government. Ultimately, corporate taxes are passed through. They have to be passed through to either in the form of lower wages for workers, higher prices for consumers, or lower returns for shareholders. And so, you know, really the best corporate tax rate is zero, because it's really just masking the fact that the government's collecting a lot of money from workers, consumers, and shareholders. And I would rather taxes go directly on individuals so that people can see sort of the overall cost of government. So lower the corporate tax rate is, in my view, the better we have more honest government and we have a stronger economy.
Well, underlying this whole discussion, it seems to me, and debate is just what's going to contribute most to economic growth. And Jared Bernstein quoted Donald Trump as saying what he wanted as opposed to what we have. He also claims he'd like 3% growth. We're at 2% now. And this plan, Jared Bernstein, again, in terms of growth, you want to go on record here?
Very much so. I've been on record extensively.
You just don't see any growth possible here. That's really what I'm...
Well, No, I definitely see... Well, first of all, I mean, remember, we are growing at about 2%, so that's not going to change. I certainly don't see the tax cut plan accelerating growth at all. And in fact, if you look at these, you know, quote, dynamic scores that factor in the costs to the government of running... large budget deficits. And Ireland is facing this a similar problem in this regard. They're finally waking up to the downsides of their very low rate. They're unable to make the public investments they need to generate the productivity growth that's been lacking, not only in our economy, but in theirs as well. And so once you start once you cut taxes to the degree that they're talking, you add a couple trillion dollars onto the deficit, you're not going to be able to invest in infrastructure, in roads and bridges and water and ports and communication systems. You're not going to be able to invest in education suitably. And therefore, if you actually look at these, you know, scores that kind of take that seriously, there's a downside risk to growth in the out years. So I would very, very much caution anyone who's thinking that we're going to generate enough growth to offset the cost of this tax cut. I said earlier, it's never happened. And I suspect even Chris wouldn't make that claim, that growth effects will fully offset the cost of the tax cut.
Well, here's a comment from a listener who says, an increase in taxes means better public schools and infrastructure, robust police and fire departments, and medical care for the indigent. Tax is a word with positive connotations. Let's use it that way, please. And let me bring another caller on. And then Ganesh, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. So this talk about Ireland kind of brings the topic of, did Ireland really benefit from just the plain corporate rate tax cut, or was the short growth highly associated with some shady tax schemes known as double Irish and others, where foreign companies were enticed to set up subsidiaries in Ireland so that they can basically get away with not paying taxes in their home countries?
No, you're raising an important question about what's under the radar here. I don't know. You want to address that, Chris Edwards? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. The caller actually touches on something that's very interesting. Ireland has been a haven for two decades now with their low corporate tax rates, both for real investment, meaning a lot of U.S. and foreign companies have built factories in Ireland, but they've also become a haven for paper profits. U.S. companies and companies from Europe have shifted profits, you know, sort of on paper profits, into Ireland because of the low corporate tax rates. So that's tax avoidance. So the caller is absolutely right. And my argument is, if we lower the U.S. corporate tax rate, we would get the real investment back here in the United States, and those paper profits that have been pushed abroad would also come back to the United States, which would benefit the government. So that is why it is a win-win. Jared says, no, it can't be a win-win. That's not true. A corporate tax cut is a win-win. The government wins. It gets a broader tax base. It gets less tax cheating. And the economy wins and workers win because there's more factories and facilities and jobs here in the United States.
All right, you two, notwithstanding the civil and respectful way you have of amicably dealing with one another, are clearly locked in horns about corporate taxes and what they'll benefit and so forth. But I just want to bring something else in. I'd like to actually, it dovetails on that to some degree, Jared Bernstein. There's in this proposal that's been put forward by the GOP, there's talk about doubling the standard for deductions on mortgages. And the reason I mention that is a lot of people are asking about that. National Association of Realtors has condemned the proposal. National Association of Home Builders likes it because it's going to increase in construction and so forth. Where do you stand?
I'll tell you where I stand in a second, but I just can't let this idea sit that, you know, our horns are locked and he said, she said, we have a fundamental disagreement. The facts are the facts. And the facts that I have cited, and I'm talking about the U.S., I mean, we're not Ireland, we're never going to have, well, I should say we're never, we're certainly, nobody's proposing a tax rate as low as Ireland. That's not going to happen in this round. So you can put that off to the side. And by the way, the country is concerned about their revenue losses. In the United States, the scenario that Chris is outlining where you cut corporate taxes, you make up the lost revenue and everybody wins, there's no empirical evidence to support it in this country. It hasn't happened. Okay, standard deduction. So this is the idea that the Trump folks are saying they have to have something in their plan that helps the middle class because that's part of the selling point. And instead of really doing much on rates for the middle class, what they've said is they'll raise, in fact, double the standard deduction, which is another way of increasing the zero bracket, meaning the bracket at which if your income's below a particular level, about $24,000 for a couple, you don't pay any taxes. And that will take some families of middle class incomes, moderate incomes, off the tax rolls and will be a benefit from them, except one thing. There's a small print here that people have been kind of overlooking. Yes, they're doubling the standard deduction, but they're also getting rid of the personal exemption. And this is about $4,000 a personal exemption per person in the tax filing unit. Now, I don't want to get into the gnarly bits of tax code here, but if you're one of these families, and we've already seen from some analysis that a family with a number of kids, because that would be more personal exemptions, could fall into this bracket, then you'll actually be worse off. That's what, by the way, that's what Stephanopoulos was getting at earlier in that question to Cohn. So our analysis so far makes it look like this is a bit of a wash for the middle class. They benefit from the doubling of the standard deduction. They lose from the canceling of the personal exemption.
And Chris, can I get you to comment on this from your perspective?
Yeah, I'm generally in favor, although, again, I don't think the doubling of the standard deduction would do anything for U.S. economic growth. And I think if this is going to be a pure tax cut on the individual, side or a large tax cut on the individual side. I think Congress should match it with spending cuts because I am worried about the deficit.
I'd also like to go to a couple of questions here. We've got very little time here, but Jen writes, I'm self-employed, wondering how scrapping most deductions will affect someone like me. Any ideas on this, Chris Edwards?
You know, the Republicans keep saying they're going to scrap most deductions and exemptions and the like, but they're failing to tell us which exact ones they want to get rid of, other than the state and local tax deduction. They haven't really identified anything they want to get rid of. So, I wish the Republicans here, they're sort of behind the ball here. We're already almost in October. They haven't given us details of the plan. What they released yesterday was just a rough sketch. I would note, you opened the show by mentioning the 1986 tax reform. Well, both the big Reagan tax cut and the big Bush tax cut 17 years ago, they happened during the first summer they were in office. So Republicans, they got to get their act together. If they really want this to happen, they have to start moving.
Well, as I said before, the devil's in the details, but the details are not very clear. The Democrats are going to maybe make some deals across the aisles here. We'll have to wait and see. There's talk already about Schumer and Pelosi maybe giving something on the taxes in favor of more money into infrastructure, but we'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, I want to extend gratitude to both Chris Edwards and Jared Bernstein for a strong and illuminating debate. Thank you both for joining us. Chris Edwards, again, Director of Tax Policy Studies at Cato, and Jared Bernstein, Senior Fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and former chief economist for Joe Biden. His book is The Reconnection Agenda, Reuniting Growth and Prosperity. We also spoke earlier with LA Times reporter Jim Puzangera. And thank you for being a part of the program. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our engineer is Katie McMurrin. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. And we got online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Anna Sterla and Patrick Fitzgerald. Managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. Executive producer is Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.